Please welcome Rachel Ross.
So this story is kind of serious, but everything ends up okay, so you can laugh at the funny points I put in there because you don't have to worry. Everybody turns out okay. So a wake-up call is only good if you hear it. If you're the kind of person that reaches over and hits the snooze button, then you might be late for work, you might miss your plane, and on a metaphorical level, you might miss or waste a few years of your life if you don't pay attention to those wake-up calls. So I was 30, and my biological clock was ticking, and everybody, all my friends were getting married, and I thought I should too. And a handsome stranger came into my life, and I got married for all the wrong reasons. He was dashing, handsome, he was a fabulous dancer, and most important, he was a great lover. So those were good. Those were the reasons. I will tell you, I will admit, and we dated for about a year, and we had a fabulous honeymoon in Hawaii, and we loved it, and we both said, oh, we've got to come back here to live. And then there were a few little wake-up calls along the way, like I had a job, a great job at KQED in the documentary film unit, and we were out to dinner with a couple from my job, and my husband fell asleep, nodded out in the lemon vermiglio soup at the Greek restaurant. His nose was actually almost in the soup. And I tapped him, and he came to, and I said, what's going on? He said, and he explained that he worked a very early shift, and he was really tired. So, you know, I took that, I swallowed that. And he also sweated a lot at night, like buckets, like dripping, like the sheets were dripping. I'd never seen anything like it. And he just said, oh, that's just the way I am. And so, you know, things were okay. The other wake-up call was right after we got back from the honeymoon in Hawaii. He wanted to go show his friends the pictures. And I said, okay, I'll come with you. He said, no, I'm going to go myself. And so things were kind of strange, or there was a tension, and I said, let's go see a marriage counselor. And we did, and she saw each of us solo and then together, and he used that safe place with her as a mediator to reveal to me that he was a heroin addict. So he was originally from New York, and I didn't know anything. This is back in the 80s, okay? My only exposure to drug addiction was two paragraphs in Psychology 101. Seriously, I didn't know anything about it. And my parents had been married by that time almost 50, 60 years. I came from a functional family, two loving parents. I wanted to replicate that. And I believed that I could. I also had in my mind this refrain about stand by your man. I felt that it was really important and it was heroic that I would be able to maybe rescue him, and it would bond us and bring us closer together. And so I decided to hang in there with him, and he went through rehab, one of many that he went through, and I stood by him. And there were other little wake-up calls. Like, I kind of felt like I was being gaslighted sometimes. I would get my paycheck, I'd put my money in the bank account, and then bring my cash home and put it in my little drawer, which he observed. And then when I would go to get my cash, it wouldn't be there. And he said, well, maybe you forgot. Maybe you didn't put it there. Stuff like that. And then, so I started, I became very clever, actually. I would turn over the big Kleenex box, open it up, put the money in between the Kleenex, close it up, put it down. He didn't know where it was. But this is not a good way to live, obviously. And then when the stereo disappeared, so, you know, there were all these signs. Good. I'm glad you're laughing, really. It gets funnier. So there, these signs continued, and I'm sure you're asking, you know, why didn't she leave? I mean, right there in the therapy office when, but I just really was stuck on this refrain of stand by your man. I want to be like my parents. I want to be successful in my marriage. This was my first marriage, and he was a good lover. Seriously. So, wrong reasons, but anyway. So things, I could tell he was start using again, and I said, I'm out of here, I'm moving to Hawaii. That's called pulling a geographic, you know. You think, I'll move to another place and my problems will be solved. But I said, I'm moving to Hawaii, you get yourself clean and maybe, you know, we can get back together. So I moved to Hawaii and got a great job doing PR for the Honolulu Aquarium. And got a beautiful little house in the rainforest of the mountains in Honolulu. And back in the day, you know, no internet, just phone and letters. And he just still had me kind of. And he said, I'm clean. Everything's good. I really want to come there. We can try again. So I finally said, okay. We had a beautiful, romantic greeting in the Honolulu airport. You know, all that romance stuff. And I thought things were going to be okay. Of course, you know that they weren't. I was working, and he was supposed to be getting a job, and you know, who knew what he was doing there while I was at work. But one day, when he was not there, there was a knock on my door, and a Hawaiian man there with some puka shells, big guy, was there, and he asked for my husband, and he told me, I said, he's not here. He told me he wanted to break his legs because, you know, some drug deal gone bad. He wanted to break his legs. Now, I'm home alone. We're in the rainforest in a little mountain thing, and he's standing there, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, what if he wants to make an example to teach my husband a lesson out of my legs? So this is all going through my head, and we're alone, and I used my PR skills. And I said, how would you and your family like some free passes to the Honolulu Aquarium? And he said, oh yeah, that'd be chill. So he took the passes. I happened to have some. He took the passes from my trembling hand. And he smiled and left. And I left the island soon after that. Closed up and left my beautiful job at the aquarium, moved back to the Bay Area. I don't know how my husband got off the island without having his legs broken, but he did. He moved back to the Bay Area, got into another rehab program. I was then living in Mill Valley in a nice little cottage there. And we were dating on and off. We were still married, and I went to Brazil with a group of dancers for 3 weeks and fell in love with Brazil. And a lot of you here know my Brazil story. So this came before that. I had a 3-week trip and I just fell in love with it. The people, the dancing, and the culture, and the language. And when I came back, I told my husband, if this happens again, if you blow it again, I don't know how many rehab programs he had been through, but I said, if this happens again, I'm moving to Brazil. Okay, I'd already done Hawaii, now it was Brazil. And so I also was working for KQED again, and he was in another rehab program, and he was doing well, and I was doing well in Mill Valley. And because he was doing well, he got a weekend visit overnight privileges, and so he came to stay in my home, and over the weekend he brought his laundry, put it in the closet, and because I had a washing machine, and we made a delicious dinner together, took a walk along the bay, went to Sausalito, made beautiful love, went to sleep. And the only wake-up call I really ever heard was the one that came from inside me. So while I was sleeping that night, I had a dream that I got out of bed and I went into the closet and I stuck my hand down into that laundry bag he put in the closet. This is a dream. I stuck my hand down there and I hit something kind of hard and plastic, definitely not underwear. And I picked it up and it was a plastic bag full of his works. Works is slang in attic talk for the syringe and the tourniquet and the needle and everything that they keep so they don't have to share needles. And that was the dream. I put it back and then my dream moved on to something else. And near dawn, I woke up and I got out of bed and I walked over to the closet and I opened it and put my hand down in the laundry bag and pulled out the works. And I put it on the breakfast table. I didn't wake him up. I sat there until he woke up. He came out all smiles with that glow from that great passion that we'd had. And he saw the work sitting on the table and his face immediately drained of all color. And I said, I'm going to Brazil. And the very next day I signed up for a 6-week intensive session to be certified as a TOEFL instructor, that's teacher of English as a foreign language, so I could have an income stream in Brazil. I lined up a rooftop apartment in Rio de Janeiro, just a few blocks from Copacabana Beach, and I bought a one-way ticket on Varig Brazilian Airlines. So I, I went through the training. I love being an English teacher. I knew I was gonna do well. And I got on that airplane and slept most of the time. And when I landed in Brazil, I was fully woke and ready to walk on the wild side, which is where the story picks up. Thank you.